today on the Run to the Top podcast.
One of the really big essential skills is adaptable goals and adaptable training. You have to be a student in order to adapt appropriately. And to know, again, and to this idea of running by feel and knowing the ingredients. You have to know what the ingredients are. You have to be a student.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Sinead Hockey.
Hi everyone, Sinead here with you for this latest episode of Run to the Top, brought to you by Runners Connect. Thank you so much for joining me today. I know how busy you are, especially this time of year when so many of you are gearing up for your fall races. So really do appreciate you taking the time to tune in today, and I hope you enjoy it. Before we get into today's interview, I just want to share a little bit about last week's episode, just in case you missed it. I sat down with Sarah Hammer Stevens, founder and chief acupuncturist of To The Point in Portland, Oregon. Sarah was a longtime skeptic of acupuncture until a knee injury nearly sidelined her just weeks away from the Portland Marathon. After seeing several doctors with no success, Sarah went to see an acupuncturist as a last resort. The treatment not only allowed Sarah to run the race pain-free and nab a massive PR, but it also completely changed her life. Sarah was so excited to share the benefits of acupuncture with other runners that she quit her job and decided to devote her life to it. I won't lie, I had some reservations about acupuncture before chatting with Sarah, but there's really more to it than meets the eye. In addition to facilitating healing and recovery, acupuncture corrects muscle imbalances, strengthens the immune system, improves sleep, and even protects against chronic stress, all of which naturally lead to stronger, faster running. If you missed it, be sure to check it out. Even if you're petrified of needles, after hearing what Sarah has to say, you might just have a change of heart. Maybe. On to this week's episode. A few months ago, I sat down with Runner's World writer and former editor of Running Times, Jonathan Beverly, to discuss what had been his latest book at the time, Your Best Stride, a guide on how to optimize your stride and counteract the lifestyle habits that weaken it. In today's episode, I was fortunate to steal a little more of Jonathan's time to talk about his newest new book, Run Strong, Stay Hungry, which reveals the secrets of more than 50 veteran runners who are still racing fast and loving the sport decades after they started. Today, Jonathan will share with us a peek into the habits and mentalities of lifetime runners like Bill Rogers and Joan Benoit Samuelson to show us what it takes to avoid burnout and achieve longevity in the sport, both physically and mentally. And one more thing before we hop in, Jonathan was kind enough to offer each of two lucky winners a signed copy of Run Strong, Stay Hungry. So if you're interested, head on over to runnersconnect.net/giveaway. The contest is only going on for a week and will conclude at 12 a.m. Eastern, November 2nd, 2017. So be sure to enter fast. As usual, after a quick break, we'll be right back with our interview. On this week's episode, we're actually sponsoring ourselves. If you're looking for a custom training plan, coaching support, and an amazing team of supportive, like-minded runners, head on over to runnersconnect.net/train. There, you can start your free 2-week trial and add your name to the nearly 1,000 fellow runners we've helped achieve new personal bests. Again, that's runnersconnect.net/train. We hope you join us. Thanks so much for joining us, Jonathan.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me back.
It's so good to have you again. For our listeners that maybe missed your last interview, you were on with us just a few months ago to talk about your last book, The Best Stride, or Your Best Stride, and now you're here to talk about your newest book, Run Strong, Stay Hungry. So, Jonathan, you've had a pretty busy year in terms of writing, but before we get into your new book, I did want to kind of just talk to you a little bit about your background and what you do, just in case some of our listeners missed your last interview. So first off, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yes, right now I'm a full-time writer, and I coach cross-country at a local high school. I was the editor-in-chief of Running Times from 2000 till the magazine folded. It's a year and a half, going on 2 years now.
Very nice. And so, like I said, you just wrote, or you just published a new book not too long ago, which was called Your Best Stride, about how to optimize your stride, which is not, there are universal cues for sure, which you talked about, but everyone has their own unique stride. And so that was a really fun interview. If anyone missed it, definitely go check it out. But today you're here to talk about your latest book, which is Run Strong, Stay Hungry. So first off, what inspired you to write this book, and what exactly is it about?
Well, let me start with what it's about. It's about how do you keep running for a lifetime, both running and competing. I wanted to do it about competitors. In fact, the working title was Lifetime Competitors. I'm getting older myself. I'm 53, and I've been running since I was 13. I was your quintessential cross country runner, too small and too uncoordinated for other sports, and just fell into this great sport where all you needed was tenacity and ability to suffer some. you could succeed. You can participate, and then you can get better. So I've always loved it, and then as editor of Running Times, I got to meet a lot of great people. I was friends with Bill Rogers. I knew Joan Samuelson from back to the beginning. I grew up in Maine. She was in college and I was in high school. Didn't really know her there, but knew of her. And we've kept in touch throughout the years. I wrote about her Beach to Beacon race, the first year when it launched for Runner's World. And then people like Roger Robinson, who wrote for Running Times. He is in his 70s now. He competed internationally for England and for New Zealand. He set masters records in his 40s and 50s. And here he's got a replacement knee in his 70s and still getting out there and training and trying to compete. And it's like, my feeling was, I have these great resources. I'd like to find out, what are their secrets? What is the keys to, and then seeing others, particularly, some really gifted runners. As you know now, a lot of the even sort of the millennial runners are all retiring, why do some people decide, okay, that's it, I'm done. And other people like Joan still get out there and are trying to do their best, even though that best isn't what it once was.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, before we started the interview here, I've read about half of the book now, and the interviews you have included are just, there's such a wide range. Like you said, you've talked to over 50 runners within the process of writing this book, and a lot of them are these elite runners like Bill Rogers and Joan Benoit and Dina Caster, but you also included more average runners. So that's something I did want to ask you. Why did you feel it was important to include a combination of the two?
That's a good question. And I did feel it was really important. It wasn't just that we didn't have enough elites, but in terms of thinking of physical keys, I wanted to make sure. I think, if you just take off the cream of the crop, Olympic medalist, you're going to say, oh, these people were gifted to start with. So what worked for them may not work for me. So I wanted to see if that's, other people who have been able to maintain, even though they may not be as biomechanically gifted. But in terms of the psychological side too, I felt like, the elites, it's a different equation. I mean, again, when somebody like Alan Webb retires, it means he's not going to chase it professionally as a career anymore, but he might still be running. And I think there is a different level of reason that they run as soon as, when it becomes your profession, particularly, that your reasons and winning is different than somebody who's running well, but not setting records or getting medals. In the end, though, I felt that dichotomy between the elites and the not elites, it was a little bit surprious. And I found this, I felt when I was editor of Running Times too, that a lot of magazines will cover sort of the elites as fans, these people out there. And then there's the rest of us who, just jog to stay healthy. Running times are sort of for this level. And having said that, you say that I interviewed a lot of average people. All of them are still competitors, people who worked really hard to maximize whatever they had, and that could be, I was looking at some of the times and thinking, because I was going to say that I was the slowest one. I may not be the slowest one, but I'm at the bottom edge of this list. I mean, there are people, a lot of 230 marathoners for men, are more like a 38 minute 10K runner, for a woman or something that are still very strong runners. I'm going to end up in the front of the pack, but they maximized whatever they had. And what I found out with the elites that continued had that similar mentality of they didn't see themselves as different, sort of a breed apart, but somebody who's trying to maximize whatever they were given.
Yeah. Well, that there is something I do want to talk to you a little bit about later in the interview. It's just how to adapt and remain flexible as you continue to get older and kind of adapt your goals and mentality to that. But something I found so interesting in that, and what you just said about just interviewing a variety of runners really, is that despite the fact that, yes, some runners are maybe a little bit more genetically gifted, other runners, are just as ambitious and work just as hard. And across the board, you and your book discovered that there are 9 key components to all of these runners and how they have, continued to run into their later years. So among all the runners you interviewed, what would you say was the biggest and most consistent component of these 9?
It's a good question. Interesting question. I think I'd have to say the most consistent about all of them which ends up being my 9th key, which is love. That all of them love running. I mean, they love running. Every aspect of running. It's not a means to an end. It's not a way to win races. It's not a way to lose weight, or it's not to stay healthy. All the side benefits they love too, but they love running itself. The challenge, the competition. Again, they love competing, not necessarily winning. And then just the joy of being out there, being outside every day, being in motion, being alive. What running is, it's part of who they are, their passion and their identity.
Absolutely. I just feel like with among our listeners, there's everyone has a different reason that they maybe started running, but when it gets down to it, the reason you continue to run is because you love it. Maybe not every day is all that enjoyable, but when it comes down to it, the reason that you see so many runners continue into their later years is because they do just truly love it, like you said. So that does lead me to my next question. And that was, the reason a lot of runners don't continue into their later years, it seems, is because they do kind of burn out at some point. And there are a lot of reasons as to why this happens, but I feel like, you are so familiar with runners. You've talked to so many, you've written about so many, and you're a runner yourself. So what do you believe is maybe the biggest reason a runner faces burnout at some point in their career?
Yeah, another good question. And I'd have to, answer in multiple parts. I think that the physical burnout usually comes because of a lack of variety, that you end up doing, doing the same thing, the same type of training over and over again. Even if you're maybe varying, you do multiple types of workouts, but just a consistency. Runners tend to fall into it's interesting because consistency is the number one point, and getting out there every day is important. But we fall into habitual where it's sort of you're only as good as your last race, and you got to do the same thing. You race the same way, you do same training plan, same type of. I'm a marathoner, and I'm always training for a marathon, and that eventually just burns you out, both physically and emotionally. I think also that people overcomplicate it, trying to always have a detailed training plan, hit certain splits, trying to make it always and become obsessive. And again, we tend to be obsessive type people. You know, lots of engineers and marathoners.
But lots of type A people in running, right, I think.
Right. But when that happens, then it sort of becomes either you're doing it all or you're failing. And the people I've found these interviews over and over, you know, that arrived at a different spot where, you know, Steve Cartaglia, he was an Olympic trials qualifier in the 10,000 marathon. He says, you know, I stayed away from this sort of obsessive, you know, I wanted to run most days. I wanted to run hard some days. You know, that's about as complicated as it gets. And we overcomplicate things and we forget that it's about the running. It's about getting out there and doing it. It's not what you put in your logbook. I think the biggest thing, the emotional side, is people burn out because they end up with a fixed view of success that if they can't run a certain pace, if they can't place a certain way or something, then they have failed. And instead of the people who are succeeding have more of a growth mentality that it's about maximizing whatever you have right now and trying to get better. It's not about having achieved it. It's about the process of getting better.
Absolutely. I want to kind of break down everything you just said, because your book, it is broken up into two parts, like you said, and the first is the physiological principles behind a long running career. So I remember one part of that was the whole training by feel notion. And I know that is not as intuitive as we would like it to be. So I see a lot of runners that are very numbers obsessed, very, reliant on their gadgets. And this doesn't seem to be sustainable. This is something that you argue in your book. So what would you say are some tips to really just listening to your body and running and training intuitively?
The biggest thing is first to get over the mentality of quantification. I mean, the quantification is good, but it becomes obsessive and it distracts you from what the reality is. And the reality is the training and what's happening in your body, not whether you hit a certain split or not. And it's surprising to me, again, the very top runners, you know, Joan Samuelson or Gary Allen, who's run sub-3-hour marathons for 5 decades and hundreds of marathons, that would say, you know, I go by feel. I go by what my body says. And to do this requires trusting your body too. So first of all, it's just to start being in touch, you know, learning to listen to what's going on. Seeing the splits on your watch as a measure of, you know, that's what this effort feels like today, not as a judgment that I have to be running under 7 minutes or I'm doing something wrong. Trusting your body as far as recovery, trusting it as far as what pace you're going to run every day. And then that's in that chapter in the book, I talk about sort of a spectrum of people who run by feel. I mean, the one end is Roxy Erickson of Omaha that just goes out and runs whatever she feels like today. I mean, and she won a lot of races. She had the course record at the Lincoln Marathon, and she used to run like a marathon a month. But she just loves to run, and she goes out and she runs. She runs hard. Down the spectrum of having an idea of what your schedule is, but letting your body decide what pace you're going to run it at each day. Not saying I have to run. Yeah, again, I have to run 7-minute miles a day, or I have to hit a certain pace. And then, it's very loose end of the spectrum are people who say they sort of go by even the workout is what they feel like today. You go out and you get in a couple miles and you feel, I feel pretty frisky today. Let's go, you know, hit this hill hard 6 times. Again, rather than it's Tuesday and I have 800s on the schedule and I have to do them, and I have to do them in 2:47 each one. Letting your body dictate what you need to do. As far as why it's not sustainable with all the numbers, number of reasons. One is usually the numbers are derived from somebody else's schedule, which doesn't take into effect your body, your other stresses in your life, you know, what's happening right now. So, you know, anybody at any time has to be adaptable. And to adapt it, you have to know what the gauges say. You have to be in tune with what your body's saying. But then in terms of going through the decades and aging, it's huge. If you try to follow somebody's schedule, you try to follow the same schedule as you did before, it's unsustainable because you're going to slow down. And you slow down at different rates than anybody else. You can't take what somebody else did. Okay, this is what you did at 40 and this is what you did at 50, and I'm going to do the same thing. Everybody's unique. So training by feel not only allows you to adapt in that way, but adapt appropriately to your own body, your own aging, your own life circumstances.
Absolutely. You know, even at Runners Connect, obviously we are a coaching site, so we give out schedules, but I've noticed, and our coaches noticed, that the athletes that are most successful are those that aren't afraid of adjusting their schedule, you know, according to what's going on in their lives, how they're feeling. It's just, it's very much, you just have to be very intelligent about it. It seems like running intuitively is not as intuitive as we would like I said, but, you know, it is a matter of just listening to your body and accepting that, you know, some days you're going to feel like garbage, other days you're going to feel ready to roll. And those are the days to really take advantage of. So I really love that whole notion. And I know that one athlete in your book that you interviewed in particular, who is especially known for his ability to run intuitively, was is Bill Rogers. And so I actually, when I was at Zap Fitness as an athlete, Bill Rogers came to talk to one of our adult camps. And he, you know, he was just talking about how he would often make his workouts up on the fly the day of his workout. And just kind of, you know, do what he felt like doing, what his body kind of told him to do. So that was one thing I just found so interesting. And I wanted to know, when you interviewed Bill, what were some of his methods when it came to really just training by feel? And are these methods that other runners can employ, do you think?
I do think that other runners can do it if you're willing to let go and trust, which is interesting. Bill was one, but there were several who talk about this. Yeah, like I said, just making it up on the fly, which seems so, like I said, counterintuitive to those of us who read the magazines and we do, you know, all the Jack Daniels formulas, and it makes it feel like it's. Gary Allen, again, to reference him, talks about a recipe, you know, that the recipe has to be followed exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't have half a teaspoon of baking soda, things are going to blow up. You know, it's not that the cake is not going to rise. A chef knows that you dump a little bit in, you see what happens, and you put a little bit of salt in and you taste it and you see how it feels. That's what I think people like Bill Rogers have learned, is that it's about, you know, there's certain ingredients you have to do. Now, one thing about Bill Rogers that he said, and he did, you know, he told me, like he said, that he just likes to go out and, you know, he's feeling good and he starts running along the, you know, this side of the river is one of his favorite trails, and he'll take off and doing, you know, again, he'll repeats and he loves running. He's got a friend, even now, you know, he's in his 70s. He'll, you know, friend, they'll do like workout, and this guy's 10 years younger than him. So he'll take off and the guy tries to catch him. And he's, as you know, interviewing Bill, this is quite a but he says, yeah, and I can hear him coming, and then you start moving your arms, and he's moving his arms, and he says, and sometimes you get nailed, and it's so much fun.
Except
the fact that he's having fun doing it. Even at that point, it's about, it's not just, okay, I got to get in the speed workout in order to do certain, you know, do a race in a certain time. You know, this is part of my schedule. It's a drudgery or something. It's learning to enjoy that and realize that that's part of running.
Well,
so that was cool to see that. But he also was very consistent. He said, you know, he ran twice a day, yeah, 80-100 mile weeks for years. So the consistency, I think, has to be there as part of the running feel. The running of the feel can't be, do I feel like running today or not? No, the default is, okay, I'm going to run. And then what, yeah, then let it go from there. I'm going to run, like I said, going to run most days. I'm going to run hard on some days and make sure you get in all the ingredients so that you have to learn. You have to have some experience in what is necessary to put in, to put into the cake, you know, what are the ingredients necessary. And then you learn to want that too, you know, that your body feels fresh and wants to go hard. And that's, so that's not only the, you know, an enjoyment of the day and worthwhile on its own right, because running fast, feels fun, but it also then prepares you for a race coming up.
I love that. I love your analogy with the chef too. I feel like that's such a great analogy for this, because yes, so many of us runners just, we want to stick to a recipe, and doing something like what Bill Rogers does probably sounds so haphazard to our listeners. I know it sounds so counterintuitive, but I think at the core of that too, Bill, he knows how to keep it fun. Like you said, he was talking about how he would take off and have his younger training partner try to catch him. I remember in high school playing similar games, and you know, I feel like just keeping that kind of lighthearted, fun component to running is so important to longevity. So is that something you would agree with? Do you think that kind of maybe making a game out of some runs is important as well?
I think it's huge. And you saw that, I saw that across the board with all these people, that they, again, had gotten away from a fixed mentality of I have to do this day and I have to hit this split in order to feel good about myself. And that, no, that it's a joy to be out here running. And you know, and that's also part of the, I think, the burnout equation. Several people said that if you're always trying to, you know, Colleen Durack said, if you're just beating your head against the wall, trying to hit these numbers, you take all the joy out of it. And, you know, I go out and run and I run because it's fun and it's free and it's open. And that ends up being, again, getting away from the idea of if I don't do this training program, I won't run my best time in the marathon, to I'm going to run and be the best runner I can be. And the marathon time will take care of itself.
Yeah. I like that, that order of priorities there. And Jonathan, you coach high schoolers. So you actually, while this book is about lifetime runners, you are kind of, you know, at the forefront of coaching athletes that hopefully are going to be lifetime runners. So when it comes to kind of just making sure that you are injecting fun into running and keeping it fun while also teaching your runners consistency and competitiveness, how do you go about balancing that with your runners?
That's a really good question. And it's, as you know, it's a difficult thing to do because there's, you know, at the scholastic level, it's all about whether you made state or not, or beating your next town rivals. So I try to de-emphasize that as much as possible and keep everybody focused on this idea of incremental improvement, that it's not about who you beat or what your absolute time is, but are you getting better and are you becoming the best runner you can be? And celebrating that, I mean, really celebrating that. This is, I think, one of the hard things for coaches and for parents and stuff, is to say, you know, the girl who ran a minute faster in a time and placed 78th may have had a better run than the one who won it. because she has, you know, she's improved, she's conquered it. And this, I think, is again, what something, you know, one of the chapters, the first chapter of psychological principles, that it is humility and hunger. Something I found across the board, which I guess probably was one of the biggest surprises, is even people, Roger Robinson was one of my first interviews. And as I said, he's competed on the world stage. He set a world record as a master. But one of the first things he says, I was never that good. And I thought that was just Roger's being humble. After 51 interviews, I would say I almost 100% had some version of that phrase. The way I conducted the interviews was have people start at the beginning, you know, and just talk your way through your running career. And people would within the first few stories, they'd say, yeah, I was never really that good. Or I was certainly not winning races. I was certainly, but I got better. And that was the key. They learned this, this love of mastery of I can get better. I can do my best with the gifts I was given, the training I am right now, the conditions of the day. How can I do my best at that point? And that becomes the love, separate effect. The ones, and I try to stay away from this too with coaching, is that the ones really in danger are the ones probably who are winning races, you know, from the beginning, because the winning, the success becomes the drug, not the mastery. And as soon as you can't have that, and then you get this idea that you have to keep winning in order to succeed. I've been working a junior high girl this year. She is gifted by far, and she came out second year as an eighth grader and said, you know, I don't really like running. And we talked about it and worked through it some, that, you know, it's because, you know, the town and people around her, she's expected to win. She's expected to be at a certain level, and all it is maintaining that. Her sort of choices are either win or fail. As opposed to, there's no chance for I'm going to be better. But during season, she running with some of the high school kids and things to get the idea that there is a better that you can be, and there's some joy in that, in improving, not just sort of maintaining what is expected of you.
Absolutely. Kind of going off of that too, I know so many runners, and really just people in general, they have a hard time not comparing themselves to others. And I know this can sometimes leave you, kind of like you said, just feeling maybe dissatisfied with your own performance and journey, because you are maybe trying to compare yourself to someone better, and there's always going to be someone better out there. So did any of your runners that you interviewed, did they struggle with this as well?
Yeah, I think of one particular, Robin Emery. She was a great interview, little house on the coast of Maine, where I grew up, but she was a predecessor to Joan Benoit Samuelson in Maine. In fact, she inspired Joan, and she started running before Title IX, you know, again, these stories of, you know, wearing big sweatshirts and running at night so she wouldn't get it. But she just loved running, and because she was the first woman, she won every race until one day this young whippersnapper from Freeport showed up, Joan, and beat her. And she said, you know, that was it. I was going to be done. Like she said, like, you know, the Hera Labrums and Chariots of Fire, you know, I don't run to get beaten. And her mother, who hadn't originally liked her running at this point, realized, you know, it's good. She said, you know, she's not going to be there every time. Just do your best. And she's, you know, adapted to the idea that, okay, I'm going to run my best. And then quickly, you know, scaled her goals. She was becoming a master by the time Joan was becoming best. So to the smaller cohort of, you know, I'm going to be the best master here, even if I can't be the best in the race. And I think that was something I saw across the board, that successful people learned how to scale their goals to their skills. You know, to say, okay, I find a goal that's challenging but doable where I am now. As far as comparisons, what was interesting to me is, again, very consistently across the board of these runners, that they found comparisons as motivating. The idea that there was always somebody better, even top people, you know, Amby Burfoot says, you know, I was good enough to know that how not good I was. He said it more eloquently than Amby, but, you know, I got good enough to be on the same track with, you know, like a Jim Ryan, and to know, wow, you know, there are people that are a lot better. And that was motivating, the idea that I could still be better. There's always something out there. It's not just maintaining, you know, where I am. So that side, and then these runners love competing. Again, competing, not winning, you know, head to head, side by side. We are both trying to do our best, and they're helping each other along. And then once you finish, it doesn't matter who won. It's just a joy in being and working together to say, yeah, okay, who's the best here today? And that they found some, you know, a lot of satisfaction in that, in the motivational aspect of competing.
After the break, Jonathan will share how the runners he interviewed adapted their mentality and goals as they got older, and how you can do the same. This is Sinead Hockey, and you're listening to Run to the Top at Runners Connect. Nod with me if you've ever been in the middle of a training segment and had to miss a few days because you either got sick or work got busy or you had to travel. I can pretty much guarantee that all of you listening have experienced this before, and that's where having a coach becomes really valuable. When life throws you a few curveballs, we can adjust your workouts so you're not falling behind and not doing too much to try and catch back up. We also do everything we can to make sure you get the most out of every single workout. And that's just one of the awesome features our training plans have. We also build in strength workouts completely custom to your weaknesses, injuries, and goal race distance. Each workout you're assigned comes with in-depth instructions, and we of course build the training plan completely around you. No templates, no modifications needed on your end. Just a training plan written to your strengths and weaknesses and designed to help you achieve your goals. If you want to check it out, head on over to runnersconnect.net/train and start a free 2-week trial. We hope you join us. We are back with Jonathan Beverly. And Jonathan, something you touched on earlier and something you really discuss in Run Strong, Stay Hungry is the inevitable fact that after a certain point in our lives, our times stop improving and we start to slow down. How did the runners you interviewed accept this and determine new ways to set goals? Did any of them struggle with this?
Yeah, I would say 100% struggle with it. aging is not, nobody goes quietly. you gnash against it, but they learned how to adapt. What I heard from people was one of the things I did as I did these interviews was then, go to psychology and do research and try to find, what I'm hearing, try to give it some context, what does this reflect? And what I heard was this idea of emotional agility, which is a term I had never heard before, but that you have to accept it to say, they'd say, getting old sucks. It's embarrassing to run this slow. that's the emotion. But then be able to put that aside and not let it hamper you. Without emotional agility, you say if it's embarrassing to run this, this slow, you're not going to do it. You're just going to be, but to be able to have some distance from it and to say, okay, but I'm still out here, to scale and to say, and some of the coping strategies I heard as far as aging, one of the things that everybody has to do is to learn to trample on the past. This is a quote from V.S. Naipaul, but what I heard from people is some people actually threw away their old running logs. Just destroyed them.
Wow.
Other people just stopped, just stopped keeping track. Or like Colleen Direct says, it was hard to get used to that. But now I realize, it's a different age in my life, just whatever they need to do to say, I'm a different person now. This is reality now and requires honesty. There's one reason that races continue to race is important, I think, is that it gives you a point. And now, in 2017, summer of 2017, I ran a 3:42 marathon. That's the best I could do. It was a hot day, but that still was the best I could do at age 53. I'm no longer a 2:46 marathoner. I am this. And so, and it was a hot day, so I know I can do better. What can I do? That is who I am now. Mm-hmm. And accept that and say that stay. And I heard that from everyone. The other thing that a lot of people did is have sort of a reset at some point in order to facilitate this sort of who I am now. A lot of people said that they got to a point where they realized they were continually getting injured or they some major transition in their life where they said, okay, at one point I was this, now I have to reset and say, this is who I am at this point. It's not working anymore. I can't cut to do the same thing. So start over as Jonathan Beverly, 50-year-old and no longer comparing, no longer trying to be the other person. And if you have then what I heard, developed the love of mastery, the love of improving, then the joys can be the same. You don't have to, it does suck to be beaten by young people, but it's also great to go out there and say, okay, this week I did a tempo run and I was 20 seconds faster per mile at the same effort level that I was, the same joy as it was when I was.
There, the term you used in there, emotional agility, I just love that. And I think that is something that could be so useful in every other aspect of your life as well. But when it comes to running, I feel like that is so important as well to facing setbacks and really just trying to bounce back from bad times in your running career, because there are going to be plenty of those as well. So I feel like being emotionally agile in those situations is important too. So that's something I did want to ask you as well. When it came to these setbacks and kind of ruts that every runner gets into, how did the runners you interviewed, how did they face those and conquer those?
Not always perfectly. I think people, almost everybody has a story of, sort of a time when they thought maybe they were done, or or that, things were harder. One of the things that I think key is, developing a running identity that they, that I'm a runner and I'm a runner, even if maybe today I can't run. And I found this really refreshing, and it's been good for me to see life more of a long term, that it's worth. I went to a podiatry conference a few weeks ago, this came across to me there too, that it connects with the mentality, is that these guys don't see this type of surgery requires a 16-week recovery period. Ooh. For most of us, that you're going to be off running for 16 weeks is just awful. I mean, you're no longer a runner at that point. It's sort of, if you didn't run yesterday, we get into this mentality, I didn't run yesterday, I'm no longer a runner. And if I can't run my PR today, I'm no longer that level of runner. To have a much larger perspective that I'm a runner, and there are seasons, and there are, there are ups and downs, and there are, and I will come back. This is both the reset idea and the comfort to have down periods, to have seasons, to have easy days for that matter. So I think that was sort of maybe the biggest coping mechanism is having a long term perspective and a comfortable identity. The other part of the identity, and there's some psychological research behind this, is psychologists define passions as either an obsessive passion or a harmonious passion. And they have found one of the few research on masters runners is that those who are successful master runners have more of a harmonious passion, which means the activity is something you love to do and you make time for it and you put yourself into it, but it's not something you have to do. And you don't have, you're not having to prove yourself, and it's in harmony with the rest of your life. You're neither compromising the rest of your life because you're obsessing over this, nor I think, and probably more often I see this in myself and others, is that resenting, the rest of your life. I have to go to my son's basketball game and I can't do a 20 miler today. I mean, that's not going to work very long either. to say that this is a point in my life where my son is, in junior high and playing basketball, that's the time I have. And I heard that from a lot of these runners that they accepted. And what also is interesting is that in accepting it, we see these, these people that can run amazing times at 50, all of them realize that that's not their best even then, that's whatever the absolute best. They've given away given up the illusion of perfection, that mm-hmm. everything's going to come together. I'm going to have all the time in the world to train. I'm going to have, you know, my body's going to work and everything. They've given up that to say that's the best I can do now. And that's enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I almost feel like that is another component to their ability to sustain their joy for running as well, because trying to stay perfect on all fronts, on your training, your diet even, and you know, when you've got all these other things on your plate as well, I don't think that's really sustainable. I think maybe you can do that for a while, but not forever. So I think that's really something there. So Jonathan, you a little bit earlier, you were talking about the importance of runners kind of doing their research, like you said, and really just exploring maybe some psychological concepts and maybe taking a look at other people's training. So obviously in your book, this is something that our listeners can do when they buy your book, hopefully. But when it comes to just being a student of the sport, which is part of your book, what do you think really makes a good student of the sport, and why do you think that's necessary to longevity?
Good question. And it was an interesting correlation that all the runners I interviewed had said that, you know, they're students of the sport. Originally, I thought this was, you know, I had the key as they're self-coached. They don't have a coach. I eventually decided that's not true, that some people have coaches and good coaches, but they're still students of the sport. Mm-hmm. So I think the key is curiosity, mm-hmm. probably more than anything else. That Sonia Frindul, it's one of the runners. She's again an Olympian. She's setting a bunch of master's records right now. But she said, you know, anything I put myself into, if I'm going to dedicate myself to something, I have a responsibility to do our best at it and to understand why what we're doing and why it's important. Mm-hmm. I think that's key. And when you become, I see being a student of the sport and understanding training principles and psychological principles and you know all the elements is like having a detailed map. You know, a topographical map of some place, as opposed to, you know, getting a training plan or being coached without, you know, without this is like having directions. You know, somebody mm-hmm. tells you, yeah, okay, to get, you know, from here to there, you go 2 miles and then you turn left at the Red Barn and you go, which is all fine as long as you're on the course. if you get off the course, if you accidentally go 3 miles and there's no Red Barn there, then you're totally lost. You have no idea where you are. And in training, you always get off the course at some point. Something happens. Nothing goes perfectly. So if you're a student, you can know, you know, so, okay, so this is off, but this is what I was doing in order to get there. And this is how I can adapt it and work on it to get back, which then, you know, gets into the whole, you know, adaptability, one of the really big essential skills is adaptable goals and adaptable training. You have to be a student in order to adapt appropriately. Mm-hmm. And to know again, to this idea of running by feel and knowing the ingredients, you have to know what the ingredients are. To be a student. And then there's another interesting, I found level to it, is that people would say that, you know, being a student in sport and this curiosity also adds to the challenge, the goal of it. If you are, you know, designing a training program and figuring out how to be your best, that itself is challenging and rewarding, the learning and the process, which interestingly gets more complex and more satisfying as you get older. So instead of saying, well, I can't, you know, this is too bad. I can't follow the training program I used to. That sucks, you know, so I might as well give it up. It's, well, I can't follow what I used to. So you have to become even more of a student and a experimenter, you know. So so what can I do to achieve, you know, same or similar results? You know, if I can't do 4 times a mile at 5K pace anymore, or I'm so beat up I can't run for 3 days, you know, so if I reduce it by a mile, or if I reduce the pace, or if I, you know, do 800s or something, you know, so your experiment becomes more complex because you can't rely on what used to work, and because you're changing all the time. So you have, the variables are dynamic, and you're still trying to be your best with a different body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to, I think, end the interview, because I do think, like you said, that's kind of the epitome of your book and of these stories from these athletes that you've interviewed, is that it really just seems they've never had a defeatist attitude towards. Some of them maybe scrapped their, set on fire their old training plans when they realized they weren't going to work for them anymore. But they kind of took that as another challenge of sorts. They took it as a way to continue growing, but kind of experiment and see what worked for them in that particular moment of their life. So I really think that does seem to be just the epitome of kind of longevity in the sport there. And I love that. But Jonathan, this has been such a great interview. I'm so excited to read the remainder of your book, and really enjoyed what I've read so far. But just thank you so much again for coming on the show. And what do you have next on tap? You've got your launch party, I know, for your newest book next week. Is that right?
That's right.
Nice.
That'll be
nice.
In Boulder. Then I'll be in New York for the Marathon Expo, signing your best stride. At a couple of booths on Friday afternoon, if anybody's around. Nice. New York City Marathon Expo. And then I'm doing writing for lots of different, mostly websites now. Print magazines are going away.
Yeah, they are.
and casting around for my next book. I've got a few ideas. So.
Oh, very nice. Okay. So, well, we'll link below in our show notes your site so people can go and hopefully see you at the expo. But I know you've also got your high schoolers have their state meet this week. Is that right? So what are you?
That's right.
You're leaving tomorrow?
Tomorrow morning. Yeah.
Nice. So nice.
Got three kids running in the state meet. I think they have a pretty good chance of meddling.
Awesome.
It's a small class, but they seem to be confident and peaking properly. So.
That's awesome. Well, I wish them the best of luck. They really, talking about cross country always makes me feel nostalgic. I know how it feels going into the state meet still. It's still such a vivid feeling, but I wish them the best of luck and hope all goes well this weekend. But Jonathan, thank you again so much, and hope you have a great rest of your day here.
It's truly my pleasure. Thank you for the great conversation.
Running isn't always forgiving, and if you've been running for a few years now, there is a good chance you know exactly what I mean. Between injuries, mental ruts, and the curveballs life sometimes throws at us, finding long-term success and really just remaining engaged in the sport can be so difficult. That's why Jonathan's book is one every runner needs to read. Whether you're a master's runner trying to reboot your running career, or you're a beginner aspiring to be a lifelong runner, this is the book you need. For a chance to win a free autographed copy of Run Strong, Stay Hungry, again, head on over to runnersconnect.net/giveaway. Two lucky listeners will win a copy, so be sure to enter before 12 a.m. Eastern on Thursday, November 2nd, 2017. I wish you the best of luck. Before I sign off, I just have one quick announcement. Recently, we created an insiders community of incredible listeners like you who love the show and want to see it grow. It's called the Run to the Top Winner Circle, and it's a Facebook group where you can chat with fellow listeners about the show and all things running, as well as help me shape the future of the show. Not just that, but you'll also get a little bonus content not available to everyone else. So if you're interested, I would love for you to join the group at runnersconnect.net/winner. Thank you so much again for taking the time to join me today. I hope everyone's training is going well, and wish you the best of luck with any races you have coming up. I hope you join me again next time, but until then, have a fantastic week.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.